morning, members. Representative Fabian, why don't you, Representative Hornstein, are you here? Representative Hornstein, well, Representative Hornstein, when he comes, if he wants to be up there with you, Representative Fabian, we'll do that. Members, let's move the minutes of yesterday. Representative Rarick, would you move the minutes of April 6th?
So moved.
Discussion. All those in favor say aye. 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 Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Folks, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do Fabian's and Hornstein's electronic waste, e-waste bill. That's not quite perfect yet. We're going to get it out of here, and they're going to work to finalize that. Then we've got a Fabian expedited, environment review bill. And then we're going to do the My 2842, the disposable wipes bill. And then last we'll do, Representative Hackbarth, maybe we'll do the David Dill Memorial before Game and Fish, and then Game and Fish last. Many of us have ways and means tonight, so that would mean if we don't get done today, we're going to be here very late tonight. So I talked with Representative Hansen and their staff. I think we have a roadmap. It's a narrow roadmap, members, to have this wrapped up in time. And apologize, the mics are messed up, so that's why they've been on, and we're just going to work through it. Representative Fabian moves House File 1412 to be passed and on to Ways and Means. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as you mentioned, the Bill 1412 is kind of a work in progress. There's a lot of different entities that are involved trying to come to a conclusion on this bill. I know MPCA is here today. They do have some concerns, but I would like to the House the bill summary. And, of course, the other thing we have to do, Mr. Chair, is move the DE6 amendment.
Representative Fabian moves the DE6 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. The bill's in the shape you'd like. We've got about four testifiers here. Why don't we bring Mr. Alcorn from the Consumer Technology Association Board. Identify yourself. Your testimony will be limited to 1 minute. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Walter Alcorn. I'm with the Consumer Technology Association. We represent industry that is directly affected by this law and this legislation. We represent manufacturers, retailers, others in the consumer electronics industry, pretty much all the household names, several of the companies are represented here. We do support the amendment. It does, we think, provide an update to the law that we've certainly heard from a lot of stakeholders is necessary. As was mentioned, it is a little bit of a work in progress. I think we are very close in terms of having a language that everybody can buy into, and we look forward to working with stakeholders to make sure that happens.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Alcorn. Thank you, Mr. Alcorn. Next, I've got Mr. Helmers, Olmsted County. Do you want to tell us how you are with the DE6? Identify yourself for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Helmers. I'm the Director of Environmental Resources for Olmsted County and serve as the President of the Minnesota Solid Waste Administrators Association. And we promote environmentally sound and cost-effective waste management systems. And today I'm...
Mr. Helmers, your testimony is limited to 1 minute also. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Today I'm representing the Solid Waste Administrators Association and the Association of Minnesota Counties. Since the enactment of the current e-waste law, our members have been experiencing higher costs for the recycling of e-waste. Since last year, the costs of recycling some parts of e-waste have risen dramatically, and most counties, particularly those in the further out in the greater Minnesota, are experiencing even higher costs in the coming year, are expected to experience higher costs. Counties where recycling and transporting e-waste is too expensive, the costs are then sometimes placed on citizens as a direct fee for recycling e-waste. In counties like these, we end up seeing even more televisions, computer monitors, and other e-waste being dumped in roadside ditches, fields, creeks, parks, and that leads to even more costs for the counties to pick those up and obviously the taxpayers. While we do not have a complete agreement with the industry, we do expect we'll be able to work out those remaining issues, and we ask for for your support to move this legislation forward so we can continue to take steps in the right direction to ease the financial burden on counties and their taxpayers. Mr. Chair, as the members of the committee, thank you, and I'd be willing to answer any questions. Thank you.
See no questions. Thank you. Commissioner Workman, do you want to say the same thing about Dakota County? And I'll bet you can do it in about 15 seconds. Welcome to the committee. Thank you for coming up. Please thank identify yourself for the record.
Thank you for the pressure, Mr. Chair. My name is Liz Workman. I am a Dakota County Commissioner and Chair of the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board, representing six metro counties who share resources and work together to address waste problems across the region. We want to thank you for your support and for hearing this important bill on e-waste recycling. Although we prefer the bill moving in the other body, we support passage of the Delete Everything Amendment as offered today, and we will continue to work with the industry to get language we can all agree to. Things have changed since the original law in 2007. As an example, in Dakota County, our out-of-pocket costs just for the transportation and disposal of e-waste has increased 740%. Similar impacts have been felt by all counties. TVs and monitors and many electronics were a lot bigger and heavier at that time. Electronics have become much slimmer and lighter, and we need to update the law to reflect those changes to electronics.
Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate your testimony. Do you have anything else to add? No, you're okay. See if there's any questions.
No.
I don't see any questions. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it, and hopefully we'll get this resolved. I understand. Commissioner Kadelka, do you want to come down and just give us a synopsis on where we're at with Fabian and Hornstein's bill here?
Thank you, Representative McNamara. Yeah. My name, for the record, is Kirk Kadelka with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. We echo the words of the counties on the need for this provision and statute to be updated. We ask for a yes vote today to keep the conversation moving, and we'll continue to work with all parties to reach an agreement that meets all of our needs.
Thank you, Commissioner Kadelka. Members, this is the important e-waste bill to help our counties and everybody else updating. We asked members to come together last year over the year and get a bill, and they're very close. They're not quite exactly there yet, so we're expecting Representative Hornstein and Fabian to go into conference committee with the tough Senate and come out winners. Any questions for anybody? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we support the continued conversation on this to try to get to a cooperative solution.
Representative Fabian renews his motion that House File 1412 be passed and moved on to Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Fabian Hornstein, you're on to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, I apologize.
Representative Hornstein.
I just wanted to thank Representative Fabian for taking this on. I think he has the, experience and abilities to get people together, and that's what we have to do on this bill. And I'm very pleased that, we have the private sector, the counties, and the PCA working together on this, and I'm really confident we can get something done. It's really important. And I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill.
Well, Representative Hornstein, you were the one that saw the foresight to work with Representative Fabian to get it done, and we appreciate that. It's sometimes is not the happiest camper to be in the minority, and you're being very gracious in your support of working with Representative Fabian. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we've moved on, but this is really an important issue in all of the state, particularly in rural Minnesota. You heard the comments from the commissioner. The costs are escalating rapidly. Pulowski was down last week from Roseau County, and I know that you remember him being here. He's a very strong supporter of this. He's our environmental administrator in Roseau County, and they definitely see a need for this, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Representative Fabian, you might as well stay there. Why don't Ms. Gauthier and Mr. Quillis, why don't you both come forward? You're both there. There's three chairs there now. Representative Fabian moves House File 3783 to be passed and on to Ways and Means. Representative Fabian, you have the DE3 to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Discussion to the DE3. Seeing none, all those in favor of the DE3 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. D3 has adopted the bills in the shape you'd like. Representative Fabian, walk us through the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for that, I'm going to turn over to Mr. Quillis to walk through the bill and talk a little bit about some of the expedited permitting that's been here. It is a little complicated, and I want to make sure that we get the testimony correct.
Thank you. Identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'll probably defer to Ms. Goth here to kind of walk through, but I think what we're trying to do, members, is clarify some expedited permitting that exists right now with the Department of Natural Resources. We think it exists right now at the Pollution Control Agency also, but to clarify that the expedited permitting, if you go down that route, it's an option, it's voluntary, but if you go down that route, that it goes through and applies also to pre-application. So the agency has a proposal to come through and do that. We're working with them to try and go through it. We've got some differences right now. We specifically call out that we'd like to see a schedule once we start down that expedited permitting route to go through and actually go through and set some timelines. As you've seen before, though, we've tried this in terms of Tier 1 and Tier 2 permitting, 90 and 150 days. We don't get that specific, but we're trying to set some guidelines up, Mr. Chairman, again, on a voluntary basis, if you go down that way, and also ask for some specific permit writers. So if we're talking about air permits, to make sure that we have somebody that has an air permit background. Or if it's water quality, to make sure that we have a water quality, somebody that has those issues and that background there. So, Mr. Chairman, those are some of the differences I just highlighted between what the agency's proposing and what we're proposing in the DE3. And so we're going to keep working with them as this moves through the process, Mr. Chairman, and stand for any questions.
Well, and thank you, Mr. Quillis. Ms. Gauthier, could you walk through specifically the areas of concern that the agency has? I know it was originally, I believe it started as an agency initiative, and it's been tweaked a little bit, and you're not quite completely on board with a couple of those tweaks. So why don't you confirm with us where the work that's before Representative Fabian still is. Ms. Gauthier, identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Pardon me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Greta Gauthier. I'm with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Yes, Mr. Chairman, we opposed the DE3 amendment. We have some concerns with it. We think that it broadens the scope of the bill. Initially, we had looked at large permits with an EIS attached, and this broadens it to all permits. We're a little concerned about the language around the schedule right now. We're not as concerned with the concept of a schedule because that was discussed to a peripherally in our initial bill, but there are a lot of things in these permits that are beyond the agency's control that can cause a schedule to go awry very quickly. For example, litigation. We have no way of predicting when that's going to happen or where it's going to come from or how long it's going to tie us up. And another good example is the amount of public comments we may receive. So, for example, the DNR on their EIS activity for the PolyMet NorthMet project received tens of thousands of comments to the extent that it took their consultant nearly 6,900 hours, costing them almost $1 million. To do the comment review, logging, and by statute we have to respond to every single comment, so we do. So, you know, we're a little concerned about the language in here, and we can work with the chamber on that just to make sure that for things that are unpredictable like that, that there is some leeway for the agency because there's no way we can predict those, and we'd hate to get in a scenario where we have to take a guess and we guess wrong. We'd rather just have it more of a guideline than a rigorous, strict schedule day by day.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And could you remind us of the path for this bill? It's
Representative Hansen, this bill is on to Ways and Means, and then the way it sounds, it'll be going to a conference committee, I would imagine, at that point. The intention is for it to be a standalone bill. Representative Hansen.
So, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to ask Ms. Gauthier on, so you're opposing the bill as it is now. If it's going to Ways and Means and then to the floor, there's not too much opportunity for continued evolution on the bill. Your advice from the agency is opposition.
Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, We oppose this bill in the form it's in. We oppose the DE3 language, but we do have very clean and good language on the Senate side. So it is our hope that we could work with the chamber and Representative Fabian, possibly even before, you know, for the floor, to make some modifications that would improve the language and reduce our concerns.
So, Ms. Gauthier, would it be correct that you want the bill to continue to move forward rather than get killed today?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct.
Okay, Representative Hansen.
So the choice before us is if the bill is not ready for prime time, you know, the bill we just passed on, we wanted to continue the conversation. But that bill, I think the agencies were more in support of. Mr. Chair, I'm not going to roll call this, but I think we want to express some caution here that it's not quite ready for prime time.
And Representative Hansen, I think there's folks that would agree with that, but there's an honest difference of opinion here between some of the business community and the agency, which is the right path. The agency has an idea what they think is the right path. I think there's some of the business community that got a little different idea, and they've actually made a lot of headway in the last 24-36 hours, so I think between now and the floor there would be some additional opportunity. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the point you just made about the differences in what Ms. Gauthier said, I'd be interested in if there's a response from Representative Fabian or Mr. Quillis, response to public comment, lawsuits, etc. I mean, I those are good points. That's taxpayer dollars that we're talking about expending here. So interested in comments.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr.
Representative
Quillis.
Purcell, they are good comments. And I think that those could be controlled in when we go through and negotiate the written agreement that I think we could go through. And when we talk about the timelines, you've heard me since 2006 or 2010 talk about time, cost, and uncertainty in the process for us. It's a concern for us. And so to go through when we are negotiating with the agency in an expedited permit to at least try and set some timelines around it, but I don't want to put 90 days or 150 days or 6 months, but to put something in the contract with the project proposer and the commissioner that says, can we check in if we have an extraordinary amount of public comments? Can we come back and talk about that? If there's some litigation costs that we need to talk about, I think those would be covered in the contract between the project proposer and the commissioner. And to Representative Hansen's point, I'm here every day until May 23rd because they require me to be here every day until May 23rd, and have had a good working relationship with the agency, and will still keep working with them as we go through the process, because I think it benefits the business community as well as the state agency to have a process that works for both parties.
Thank you, Representative Clark Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to take the liberty of making a comment about what's happening this morning. And, you know, and I respect the way you run this committee, Representative McNamara, but it feels like we're sped up again. And to be honest, it's bringing back memories of the end of the last session. And when we're, you know, this is the second bill in a row this morning that, well, this will be worked out somehow in the future. And, you know, that's not the most transparent process. It's interesting that a couple of weeks ago that we proposed what I thought was really a bipartisan measure on the House floor to adjust the rules to assure a 24-hour rule on bills and also a two-week deadline for conference targets. And I was supportive of that partly because of Senator Carla Nelson had been talking about that in southeastern Minnesota. And I think it's relevant here because I think we want to assure we've got a process when we have time frames like we're facing today in this committee, and I respect that time challenge in the short session, but I think we can do things to assure that down the road that these bills are heard in a thorough fashion, that the conference committees are open, that the process is more open than was seen in last session. And so I would hope that there's a commitment from both sides of the aisle to reach a bipartisan agreement on those sorts of rules so that transparency can be allowed, so the agreements that these folks are talking about can be done not in the back rooms but very much in the open, and all of Minnesota can see that. I think it's relevant. I think Minnesota wants this, Minnesota watches this, and appropriately asks that we do better than we did last session. So I think that's our challenge for both parties to work together to assure that. Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on that point, Ms. Gauthier had mentioned there was a Senate companion, but I don't think there's a Senate companion. I think there's a different bill. So this is going to take some extraordinary matching, probably in the Rules Committee.
Well, Representative Hansen, I would say the Chief's Clerk's office would match them up if they match up. Members, this is an effort to try and move an agency bill that's having discussion. This is the last day this committee's going to meet. We can lay the bill over and that'll kill it, or we can move it forward in a process. If anybody else wants to speak, anybody in the audience wants to speak for or against the bill, I'm interested in continuing to move the bill forward, but if somebody wants to make a motion to lay the bill over, we can lay the bill over and it'll kill it. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I know we have a full agenda. It's a short session. Sometimes maybe we should focus on what we have.
Well, that's the point, Representative Hansen. And if the Ms. Gauthier, it was 6-0-something when I heard your voicemail to Ms. Zipko last night. The agency and the business folks and Representative Fabian have been working long hours on this issue. I don't expect you to quit working when the bill, if the bill moves out of this committee now, between now and when it gets to Ways and Means. And as we know, Representative Knobloch is open to some policy discussion in Ways and Means. So I'm hopeful that we don't, I would hope that we are farther along in consensus when the bill comes up on the floor, but it was an agency initiative that I thought deserved some good discussion. So Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, you know, move it along, and if it doesn't, you know, if there's still drama that comes up on the floor, I guess we'll have the discussion there.
Well, Representative Hansen, I would say if there's going to be still drama on it on the floor, it's not going to come up, but that would be my guess.
I was hoping you'd say that.
So. Yes, I think we're actually close, folks. There's sometimes a lot of theatrics around here, and I understand that because of the partisan nature of this body, unfortunately, but we are trying to do some good work here. I appreciate we've been working well with the minority, and I know it's frustrating at the pace sometimes, but this is an important bill. Representative Fabian renews his motion that House File 3783 be passed on to Ways and Means. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment's on to Ways and Means, or the bill, I'm sorry, Representative Fabian. Next, I have House File 2843, non-woven disposal product labeling bill. 2842, I did my dyslexia and crisscrossed those numbers. Apologize. We want to move this bill on to Commerce. Is there somebody that wants to explain this bill for me? Ms. Gauthier, why don't you walk us through the bill where we're at? Let's see, who wants to do the most thorough one-minute job? Mr. Johnson after Ms. Gauthier. Members, this is an important bill. This is, for those of you, the acronym, it's with the polar bear bill. This is, unfortunately, we've got a whole bunch of stuff being put down the toilet in cities that ends up in sewer pipes and it's getting all plugged up, and we're having to put grinder pumps on lift stations and all kinds of stuff across the state. I never realized until my able CA reminded me that she grew up on a septic system where people know the only thing going down a toilet is what's supposed to go down a toilet. And if you live in the city, like I grew up, sometimes you put down the toilet whatever seems like it'll go down the hole. And that's unfortunate. And sorry for the graphics, members, but this is a subject that needs some attention. So let's see. Ms. Gauthier, why don't you walk us through it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greta Gauthier, MPCA. Mr. Chairman, this bill is an agency bill that came out of our 2015 water infrastructure listening sessions where we held sessions around the state. And, Mr. Chairman, you attended the one we had in Hastings and appreciated having you and Representative Hansen there and others. And cities were talking to the Commissioner PCA, the Health Commissioner, and the PFA Executive Director, Public Facilities Authority, about issues they have with water infrastructure. And the one issue that was brought up very broadly across the state was the problem when these non-woven personal care or disposable products are flushed, and they cause cost and clogs and equipment replacement concerns and so forth with cities. So walking you through quickly, subdivision one is definitions, especially lines 1.11 through 1.18 define flushability. Subdivisions 2 and 3 prohibit the labels flushable, septic safe, or sewer safe on a product unless the product meets the definition of flushability. Subdivision, and it also requires a do not flush label. Subdivision 4 is the penalty and enforcement. Mr. Chairman, there's a penalty of $5,000 that's modeled on a couple other provisions in statute that have a similar level, for example, of penalty, for example, the labeling requirement of biodegradable on plastic bags. That's a $5,000 penalty also. Subdivision 5 is an exception for advertising of all kinds and also for retailers, wholesalers, and distributors. And the effective date is January 1st of 2018 to give the industry time to comply. So there is my 45-second rundown, Mr. Chairman.
Good job. Thank you. Mr. Johnson, are any questions for Ms. Gauthier? Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Gauthier, thank you for your testimony. I did sit in on this hearing when it was in the Senate, not by choice. I thought it was interesting. Just a fact to note that one of my cities found a softball in the sewer. Explain how it got down there. I can't. Point being is I applaud what you're doing and I support your efforts. However, how are you going to handle all of these products that come in from China or India or Japan or any other place in the world or in the country, how are you going to have these things labeled when they come in? I understand if it's made in Minnesota that we have these laws that these labels come on, but this looks like, I mean, again, I support what you're trying to do here, but how do you get past that hurdle?
Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, I believe...
Well, Ms. Gauthier, I'm going to do one thing quick. Representative Neuberger, there's basically three manufacturers in the entire industry, so it actually is that we're having the problem centers around, and it's around labeling on these three manufacturers' products. So actually, this is a workable one that we believe can be worked out with the manufacturers. It's not a real 100 different manufacturers. There's basically three, and actually, they're working. Does anybody have that graphic, that little plastic picture with the toilet and the big red X? Did anybody bring that today? They're actually, the industry is, it is out here somewhere. Everybody's laughing, but nobody's got it. Okay, so we didn't bring props. But Representative Neuberger, they're working on putting the graphics on these packages so that they know not to be flushed, and it will be a graphic. It won't be in a language. So I think it is... doable, and so sorry for interrupting. Did you have anything to add to that, Ms. Gauthier?
No, Mr. Chairman, you're
correct. Thank you. Mr. Quillis, do you have the prop or no?
Mr. Chairman, Tony Quillis again, Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. In your packets is an industry code of conduct, code of practice. It's known as the GD3 or Guidance Document 3. On that page 3 is what they call the tidy man and what that label looks like. As you go through and meet the industry standards, granted they're voluntarily met by most of the trade associations that are members of this or manufacturers that are member of this trade association, but you can see the tidy man label in there, Mr. Chairman. That is in your packet.
Thank you. And the idea is that when you flip open, when you're changing the diapers on your grandchildren, you flip open that top little plastic thing to grab out the wipes. Takes about 3 or 4 Representative Neuberger for a grandchild at a time. And when you pull those out, 5, okay, that would be my daughter would do, that daughter-in-law, but I only use 3 or 4. Inside that flip label would be this picture of the X or through the toilet saying, don't put those down there. So it's a kind of a common sense thing. Ms. Gauthier, comments on the number to be used or needed?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Gauthier.
I've had experience using multiple numbers of those on children. Okay. But
depends on how bad the load is.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to note that this bill is supported by
I'm sorry, that was inappropriate.
Including the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, the City Engineer Association, of course, the League of Minnesota Cities, City Engineer Associations, Conservation Minnesota, the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association, the Minnesota Rural Water Association, and the Minnesota Wastewater Operators Association, as well as three national associations, the Association of Clean Water Administrators, the American Public Works Association, and the Water Environment Federation.
Thank you. And members, we are concentrating on the environmental impact and the commerce part of it, where really the labeling and stuff will be discussed in Representative Hoppe's committee, naturally. So, Mr. Johnson, we still haven't heard from you yet, have we?
Not yet, Mr. Chair. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. Thank you very much for bringing this bill forward and for the time today. Just want to make it clear, this is a real problem. Almost every city in our state has to deal with this. We get emails constantly from people of having to actually dedicate half or a full staff person to cleaning grates, screens, pumps, and lift stations to remove what is frequently a clog heavily contributed to by these theoretically disposable products, many of which are not. Some are labeled correctly, some are not labeled correctly. The definitions being used by the industry do not match what happens in a wastewater system. The lab tests that are being done are for 30 hours of churning. That's not what happens in a wastewater system. You get about 20 minutes for that thing to clean through the system, or it gets stuck, and it's not a pretty picture. We could bring pictures if the committee would like. And the real problem then, Mr. Chair, is both the cost to the infrastructure, where we have many cities facing $50,000 or $100,000 costs to put in shredders and grinders and change screens and lift stations annually, and that cost gets passed on. So the cost of this product being disposed of in this way goes to the ratepayers of that utility. It goes to the homeowners and the businesses in that community to clean that system up and repair it. It furthermore is a liability, because if the system backs up, either it's because the city didn't maintain the system accurately, in which case the city's insurance costs go up dramatically and they have to pay for that, or the homeowner gets to find out, as one recently did that just contacted us, that the city had been maintaining the system properly and they get the $25,000 cost of redoing their entire basement because of a sewer backup. So this is a very real issue, and that's, I think, Mr. Chair, why it's here, is the cost to infrastructure, wastewater infrastructure in this state is significant. We do agree with the industry that behavior change and education is the key to making this change. However, we need the industry to not be miseducating while cities are trying to teach people what not to flush. We work very hard on this in every city. If you've seen your water bill and your sewer bill, there's always do not flush these things information. We're constantly getting it out every way we can, but we need the labels to be clear, and we need the definitions of what is appropriate to be flushed to be accurate for how a wastewater system works. That's the intent of this bill.
Thank you. Any questions from Mr. Johnson? I think we have two testifiers. Why don't you, two cities, I know my city of Hastings is here, Mr. Egger, and I believe Montemita. Why don't you both, oh, I'm sorry, Representative Purcell, excuse me, are you that an old note? That was from before, sorry. Okay, we'll bring down these two cities. You can both give us about a minute of nice graphic explanation of how the lift stations in Hastings had to be replaced with grinder pumps because of polar bears. Please identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Nick Egger, and I'm the Public Works Director of the City of Hastings. Thank you for the opportunity to share our story with you today. In Hastings, at the advent of flushable wipes hitting the market, we began to see a significant increase in the number of call-outs for services to our lift stations to declog pumps that were being plugged up by wipes. It was very evident that was the problem at hand. These products were jamming up our pumps and causing us to have too many service calls, more than we would typically see any given year, by around tenfold. And to combat that problem, what we ended up doing is replacing a good deal of all of these pumps in our lift station systems in order to better pass those products and get them through and alleviate some of the risks that we were facing. That cost the city about $26,000. It did not completely avert that problem happening. We still occasionally do have this issue occurring, but it has helped us combat it. It's not been a complete solution. So we do support the legislation at hand and appreciate the opportunity to comment on this today. Thank you.
Question. Seeing none, thank you. Please identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Joel Schilling. I'm an elected council person at Mata Midi. And as Craig so aptly pointed out, this is across Minnesota. It doesn't matter if you're a big city, little city, it's a problem. This came to me on my testimony, you'll see, just to make this personal, our assistant public works director in February said, Joel, you got to do something about this. Do something about what? About something I was unaware of. Sorry, I didn't use this product. This is plugging our system. What is? These disposable wipes. Well, I'll see what I can do. So quick education, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. So right in the middle of that testimony, you'll see what our director of public works gave me in terms of real costs. Just like Nick has said, this is dollars that we normally don't spend to visit lift stations on a biweekly basis, sometimes more frequently, to clean them out. Okay? Then finally on that first page, as we speak, my colleagues in the industry, Water Environment Federation, American Public Works Association, and the Industry Association, right now are negotiating in Washington, D.C. on that GD4, guidance number 4. Well, it's been going on for 3 years.
Thank you. Appreciate
your testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Mr. Councilman Member, thank you for coming in. We appreciate that. It's good to get both the perspective from the professionals actually doing it and those folks that are responsible like yourself for the money decisions that unfortunately this is causing. I want to commend the industry for working on this issue and taking it seriously. I appreciate that. Mr. Coolis, did you want to tell us you're opposed to it, or is that good enough?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Coolis, welcome back.
Coolis from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Just a couple of quick points, Mr. Chairman, and I'll draw your attention to a couple of handouts. Anytime you talk about manufacturers, our manufacturing members, whether you're manufacturing wipes, wheels, or widgets, anytime you start talking about state-specific labeling, it is a concern to us. Because as we move, our manufacturers move their products through the system, and it goes through to the wholesaler, to the retailer, to the, ultimately to the point of sale, somewhere along that line you have to make that decision. Is this product sellable in Minnesota? Is this product sellable in Iowa? Can this one be sold in North Dakota? And right now no other state in the nation has done this. Maine and New York are looking at it, but nobody else has done it. So we would be the first. So we have some concerns about the availability of product in Minnesota if we have to have a state-specific label for Minnesota, Mr. Chairman, members. Second point real quick is that when we go through and talk about this bill doesn't contain what's called the manufacturer retail lag. As a product is made that takes 2 weeks, 2 months, as a product is moving through the system, right now on an effective date of January 15th, there's going to be product that's still being manufactured and moving through the system. And I've had conversations with the chair about to try and delay those or put two different dates on for stop at manufacture and stop at sale. And then real quickly, Mr. Chairman, I've drawn your attention to the code of practice for the industry, and the council member mentioned the GD3, which is a voluntary document, and they had a point of saying they did not have some input into this. In your packet, there is also, as he mentioned, GD4 is meeting right now, just started in March. You'll see a list of who's in there. It's the manufacturers. It's also the environmental groups, as well as representatives from the municipalities to try and go through and strengthen this document. And I wanted to make you aware of that. And then also to Representative Neuberger's point before, I have a color one, but you have one. This is a small sample size, but this is three composition studies in Portland, Maine, of the situations we're talking about where the screens were clogged to go through. As you can see, when you talk about flushable wipes, it's 8%. It's 47%. Again, small sample size, but 47% of paper towels and other things, softballs, golf balls, we've heard stories of how they get down there. I'm not quite sure, Representative Neuberger, but they're going through there. But then again, to draw through, and Representative McNamara has also pointed through that, on the back side of that industry document, it is a huge education campaign. We saw it in Portland, Maine. We established a baseline of some of these compensation studies in late 2013 and looked again in April 2014. in that time, a heavy media campaign. They do a great job of trying to inform people, but a heavy media campaign of TV, print ads, social media saw a dramatic drop. So it's an education campaign that the industry is willing to work on, Mr. Chairman. With that, I stand for any questions.
Representative Hansen. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr.
My co-author. Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Mr. Quillis, I just have what I think is an obvious question. You mentioned the manufacturers. I think the obvious question is, why do they label these as flushable when it's pretty clear from these gentlemen and others that they simply aren't appropriate to be flushed?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, they are labeled as non-flushable. But the problem is one of the deals is where it's used. If it's used in the kitchen, more than likely it's going to go in the garbage. If the product is transported into the bathroom to be used to clean a sink or a counter, then more than likely it's going to be flushed. And it's an education component. The product is labeled as non-flushable. What the consumer does with it, I can't control.
Representative Johnson, sometimes the word do not flush is like between a 16th and an 18th of an inch high on the back. So our emblem will go a long ways. Last comment, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on the path, this is going to Commerce. Is Commerce meeting anymore, or are they no longer meeting after today?
I do not know their meeting schedule. I have had discussions with Representative Hoppe. It's my hope that we can move it out of here today.
And Mr. Chair, I'd agree. I think it's important to show a strong bipartisan support for this bill, so I want to ask for a roll call.
Okay. Roll call has been requested. McNamara votes aye. Well, let's do this. Anybody in the audience want to speak for or against the bill? Anybody in the audience want to speak for or against the bill?
Ready when you are.
I'm going to lay the bill over. Representative Hackbarth, why don't you do the David Dill bill? Representative Hackbarth moves House File 2528 to be passed on to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 2528 is some language that has broad bipartisan support. I think everybody's on board with renaming the some trails up in from the in the Arrowhead region from all the way from Lake Superior all the way over to the Tower area, and I think everybody's on board. And the reason we're before your committee, Mr. Chairman, and the reason I asked you about Ways and Means is we need some money from the dedicated accounts to purchase and install signs with the new name.
Thank you. Any further discussion on House File 2528? Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and I think this is an important bill. David Dill was obviously a huge advocate of the snowmobile industry and as a trail administrator before he came down here, so I just urge everyone to support the bill.
Thank you. Further discussion? Anybody in the audience to speak for or against the bill? Representative Hackbarth renews his motion to House File 2528 be passed and on to Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The bill is passed on to Ways and Means. Representative Hackbarth, the last bill for today is House File 2844, commonly referred to as the Game and Fish Bill. If you want to walk through that bill, please do. Probably should go through section by section, Representative Hackbarth.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in with respect to all to time, I think we can move right into amendments. I think everybody pretty much knows what's in the bill. It's kind of a shorter game and fish bill than we've had in the past. There are issues in here that some folks might feel controversial. The trying to stop the muskie fishing is going to be the muskie stocking is kind of a controversial issue, but we can talk about that. Trying to stop the lead shot ban is another one. The blaze pink issue is something that the state of Wisconsin has done, and I think that we can do that in the state of Minnesota as well. Eliminating the wild turkey stamp, I think, is important. That was originally created because the only place in the state of Minnesota when I created the turkey stamp was the only place where wild turkeys were down by Whitewater State Park. Now we have wild turkeys everywhere. It was originally created so we had a fund to transplant turkeys all over. We've got turkeys all over the state now, and I don't think we need to do that anymore, so we can eliminate that stamp. I would stand for questions, Mr. Chairman. There's a gross over limits issue in the bill that Governor Dayton wanted. Everybody's on board. There is a night vision issue in the bill that has to do with federal cartridge and doing some testing on some things that they manufacture. But I think Representative Fabian has a couple of elk issues in the bill, relatively minor issues, but need to be addressed. And then we also have the Mille Lacs walleye issue that I'm trying to address too. That's pretty much the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Hackbarth. I think any discussion to the bill? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hackbarth, I was at my local Turkey Federation banquet last night and talked to Mr. Glines, and he expressed some concern about the deletion of the stamp, and he said he was going to try to read it last night. I don't know if that occurred or not.
Representative Hackbarth.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, that did not occur. He did not call me. He did not text me. He has my number, my cell phone number. I've talked to Mr. Glines a number of times on this, and he did not indicate that at all. As a matter of fact, he told me that we're no longer transplanting turkeys, and that's what the stamp was originally intended to do. Mr. Glines came to me himself and asked me to create this stamp, and we did that back in 1995 or 96. And he did not indicate to me that he was in opposition to removing this language.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and I didn't say he said he was in opposition. I said he expressed some concern. I think it's about the contest and that they have the contest for the stamp. And so I wanted to see if he had talked to you because he said, I better talk to Tom. So,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, you know what? The DNR screwed this all up a number of years ago when they blended everything together. The contest was a good thing to have. It's probably the only good thing left of this whole thing with the stamps, and it's not even as good as it used to be. This was a good thing that the state of Minnesota used to do, to have these contests with the presentation of the different paintings, and I think the DNR really screwed that all up by blending everything together and putting out, even buying the stamps. Now it's all blended into the license. I think that's all wrong. That was a good thing that we had going. And Representative Peterson, when he was here, he was behind this turkey stamp 100% because of that. He was an artist. And they messed it all up, and he knows that. And I wish they would have left it alone. But even that is messed up now.
Okay. Thank you. Why don't we move into amendments? Or any more discussion to the bill? Any more discussion to the bill? I think we'll do the amendments. I think, is there anybody in the audience that wanted to speak to the bill? I'm assuming most of the audience is here in regards to specific amendments. Does anybody want to speak to the bill? If it is about an amendment, I'd rather you wait till the amendment's offered. And everybody should know what amendments there are. Does anybody want to speak to the bill? Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, good morning. For the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. This bill did originate as the department annual game and fish bill. Through the process of assembling it, there's been a number of things added to it, some that the department supports, some that we don't support. We're working with the author to try to address our concerns. I just wanted to get that on the record that we do have some concerns with different sections of the bill, and I'm not going to go into all of them at this point in time.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Nest, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since he's at the table now, you have a different point of view about lead in ammunition, and what did you base your decisions on? Do you have research that you did or that you've used research of others?
Madam Chair, members,
Commissioner Meyer.
I could bring up some people that speak to that issue if we're so desired. Our real concern is the legacy that we're leaving on these lands. These are the jewels of the state of Minnesota, hunting grounds that are going to be hunted for generations to come, and to allow the continued deposition of lead in these same areas year after year is just increasing the liability for the state at some point in time. So, well, the scientific evidence, some people will say, doesn't justify the means. Other states are doing this. South Dakota, North Dakota require non-toxic shot on their state public lands, and we just feel it's the right way to move. It's only in the farm country. It only affects a small percentage of the lands. and it's something that we support moving forward with. I know the concern, Mr. Chair, one other comment. There's a concern from some people that it would be leading to the possible ban of lead bullets. We are in no way, shape, or form looking at any kind of prohibition on lead bullets.
No.
We're focusing on lead shot on wildlife management areas in the farmland.
Thank you. Mr. Ness.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lance Ness. I'm president of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance. We generally support the Game and Fish Bill. We want to thank Representative Hathbart for all his hard work. We do have some concern over a very controversial section, Section 32, for the stocking of muskies. We don't believe it's based in scientific fact. We believe that it's should be supported by science, and we think the DNR has done due diligence in that fact. And lastly, I would just point to our neighbors to the north in Canada, where muskies and northerns and walleyes and bass all seem to get along, and that's pretty hard in a fish-eat-fish world. So we just want to make our note there that that's the one section we have some difficulty with. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Anybody else speak for or against the bill? Thank you. Why don't we move into first... there's the A6 amendment. I think this is a Representative Fisher amendment. Members, I'll move for a roll call on the A6 amendment. Representative Fisher, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reason I'm introducing this amendment is I know that in the past we've had some changes to the trapping laws in 2012 to try to address this problem, but since then we've still had issues where we're still losing dogs to getting caught in these traps. This is a provision that will move it forward to make sure that we can reduce that likelihood and protect the dogs that are out there. Currently we have, while we have 6,000 trappers, we got about 200,000 fowl hunters that go out and use their dogs to help chase the fowl out of the lands. And what happens is these dogs are out there, they're trying to do their best to get the fowl out, but if you've got traps in the area, and many times these traps are also baited with dog food, the dog will go right toward that trap. Next thing you know, you've got a dog that's being caught and maimed in the process or killed. Plus, in addition to the 200,000 people that we have who are hunters using it, we've got another 2 million dog owners in the state. And this is something to go forward and start addressing this problem.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Questions for Representative Fisher. Members, can I have a show of hands, because we don't have very many folks signed up to speak on this amendment. I see two folks are at the table. Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to speak for or against this amendment? Could you just raise your hand so I kind of have an idea? We're trying to work a path towards 10 o'clock. Is nobody else in the audience speaking for or against this amendment? Nobody else is speaking for or against this amendment. Please identify yourself for the record and limit your testimony to 1 minute.
Yeah, Representative, Mr. Chairman, they will be very brief.
Mr. Chair, members, Tim Spreck, representing all of the organized trappers in the state of Minnesota, both the Minnesota Trapping Association and the Minnesota Forest Zone Trappers. On its face, this seems like something we should be seriously considering, but make no mistake about it. This is the death of trapping trade, and all the good things that it does with the removal of unwanted species and the fur industry, which provides revenue for a lot of people out in the North Woods and throughout the state. This amendment is addressing a problem that really doesn't exist. Last year there were 7 dogs killed in traps. If it's your dog, it's a tragedy, but in reality, when you consider the hundreds of thousands of traps that are out there, it's statistically a zero, and I don't want to downplay the importance of the potentially losing a dog, but please keep in mind that of those 7 dogs, every single one of them was off-leash, uncontrolled, and on private land. Trappers are responsible. They do an excellent job of trying to limit the exposure, but there's no way that we can possibly defend against that. With me today, I have Mr. Gary Lestickle, who will be happy to address any questions you may have regarding the legality or the biology of anything that might be associated with this. Thank you.
Any questions for the testifiers? Mr. Fisher. Representative Fisher, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do know that there are a number of other states in the union who do much more restrictions on their traps, and they're still able to have the trapping go forward. So how is it that there other states are able to do these type of things, and we're feeling it's going to be more of a problem here in this state?
Mr. Lestickle, please identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm represented on the committee.
Commissioner, my name is Terry Lester. I'm an attorney. I represent the Minnesota Trappers Association, the trappers in the state. There are a wide array of different regulations in different states having to do with traps, snares, different types of traps, this body grip trap specifically. Minnesota has a very unique environment. So unlike Wisconsin or eastern states, parts of the state don't, in Minnesota, have no trees. So an elevated set simply outlaws traps in that part of the state. Other part of the states have snow and weather conditions that are changing during the season. This trap works when no other type of trap will work. So it would substantially reduce. This bill, as Mr. Streck testified, would essentially end meaningful trapping in the state. Also, the fur bears that these traps are being set for are different in Minnesota. So a coon in Alabama may weigh 10 pounds, where a coon in Minnesota may weigh 30, 35 pounds. They just can't get caught in a smaller trap. And it's very true that, as you indicated, every dog is very important. But it's not correct that the hunters that are going out controlling their dogs are the dogs that are getting caught in these traps. There are examples where it does happen, just like a dog will get out on the road, even control, and get hit and killed by a car. That is a tragedy that happens. But it is not the types of dogs getting caught in these traps. These are dogs that are, by and large, uncontrolled. The owner lets the dog out in the morning. It just doesn't come back until night. And eventually, it gets itself into trouble. They kill chickens. They chase deer. They get caught in traps occasionally. We have, at no expense to taxpayers, have set up an education program where new trappers have to go through the education program, and they're certified by the Minnesota Trappers Association. Trappers are educated where to set, where not to set, but it's very hard to set one size rule that takes into all of the various variables that happen in the field. So there has been a promotion that someone should be scared to take their dog out in the woods. I've used these traps for decades, set hundreds of them every year for 100 days a year. I've never caught a dog. That's the reality of most trappers. And if trappers follow the law that are currently in place, dog owners follow the law that are currently in place, a dog getting in the trap, notwithstanding the hype that's been brought to this issue, is extremely rare. It doesn't make it less tragic, but it's extremely rare. We're not asking dogs to be pushed out of the woods. They have the right to be there. Trappers are coexisting with them. But certain very limited dog groups are coming in and saying, we want trappers out of the woods, including private property, because we can't control our dogs to go onto that property. So this bill gets into issues that doesn't even wouldn't matter and wouldn't help dogs in any case, but it would essentially stop meaningful trapping in the state.
Representative Fisher. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would disagree with some of the arguments that you have in there. I do know that while we've had 44 dogs have been reported since 2012, there are many instances where people are on their private lands, their own lands, and their dogs haven't come back. So we feel that this is being underreported. I think that from what I've seen where other states have been able to do adoptions where they're able to protect the dogs and protect the other people that are out there, I think it's something that we should be moving forward on. I think that it's important. It's not going to outlaw trapping across the state. I think this is something that is, the way it's outlined here, it still allows the trapping to occur, but it does a better job of protecting the dogs and the other wildlife out there, because it's not just the dogs that we're losing, but other wildlife that are in that same process.
Thank you. Seeing no other testimony, Representative Hackbarth, do you support the amendment?
No, I do not support the amendment.
Clerk will call the roll. McNamara votes no.
Fabian.
No.
Representative Clark is not here. Cornish.
No.
Eklund.
No.
Fenton.
Yes.
Fisher.
Yeah.
Green.
No.
Hackbarth.
No.
Hancock.
No.
Hansen.
Yes.
Hausman.
Yes.
Heintzman.
No.
Hornstein.
Yes.
Johnson.
Aye.
Neuberger.
No.
Purcell.
No.
Poppy.
No.
Rarick.
No.
Torkelson.
No.
Uglum. Is not.
There being six ayes and 13 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Next, Representative Fisher, I think you have another amendment. We have the A7 amendment.
Yes,
Representative Fisher.
Yes, Mr. Chafe. Thank you. I'd like to move this on. And basically what this is saying is another attempt to come in and address the private land issue. Is I know that these days we have technology that is much more advanced than we had in the old days when trapping was occurring. It's much easier to take a GPS unit and go out and see where lands are, where private lands are, where boundaries are. And I've had people who have been kind of bothered by having to make sure that they're going out to check all the time to see if the postings, right now they're required to have postings every 500 feet, having to go out to make sure the postings are all up there to make sure to keep traps and everything up. Keep traps off the land where they'd like to let their dogs roam for free and not have to worry about traps being inadvertently set.
Thank you. Anybody in the audience to speak for or against the bill? Representative Hackbarth, do you support the amendment? I'm sorry, the amendment.
I oppose
the amendment. Representative Hackbarth supports the amendment. Any discussion? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask the testifiers. So this amendment is asking or saying that when you put a trap on private land, private property that may not be your private property, but somebody else's private property, you need to get written permission. You're opposed to that?
Mr. Lestico.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, we do oppose this. This is much more complicated than it would see on its face. Initially, right now, a landowner has a number of methods to have someone they don't want on their property not go on their property. If it's agricultural property, it doesn't need to be posted. It is still legally the same as posted. If it is private property, there are a technical requirement for what needs to be posted. When people hunt and trap, they don't go to the technical requirement. If it says no trespassing, keep off, they keep off. Trappers are not, they go every day. So unlike a hunter who would go onto a property and leave and never be found, a trapper has to go every day. Their tracks are in the snow. They have to park their vehicle. A landowner clearly know. I have probably 50 landowners that I trap on every fall. I check with each and every one of them every fall. It's a much different thing to get written permission. A lot of landowners, it's not correct, but they believe that they increase their liability when they sign written permission rather than verbal permission. They simply won't do it. Other large landowners you can't find. You'd have to be a title attorney to find out who owns that particular piece of property. It's vacant. They live out of state. You can't get them. Even if you can get them, it's hard to get written permission. And this sets out unfairly a process for trappers that's different than anyone else. So you could go out with a high-power rifle or a shotgun on this property without written permission. But a trapper would have to get written permission to set a weasel trap. And it's very difficult. For water, it specifically indicates in the amendment that it applies to water sets. If they're staked in water, you still need written permission for that. I will tell you, go to the Rum River and float down the serpentine way the water moves, not knowing at any given time who specifically owns that property. But yet this would make it a crime. You could put someone in jail for up to 90 days if they didn't have written property. It's very hard to tell. People generally think that the water between the land between the water and the ordinary high water is public, that you can go on it if you want. It does not. Minnesota has a riparian land rule. So if the water goes down, the landowner that owns the riparian land becomes the possessor of that land. Changes back and forth. So every water set in the state on almost all rivers, unless they happen to be going through public property, would need to have written permission. Parts of the state, there's a checkerboard of federal, state, private. It's almost GPS won't tell you where you're at any given time. Landowners are happy with having trappers there. They don't have a problem. If they do have a problem, simply put a no trespassing, keep out sign, trappers stay off it. We recommend all trappers to get permission. But written permission is much more difficult to get, and you can inadvertently get off that property. Trappers are going to get charged criminally. So we do object to this amendment.
Thank you. And I'm wondering if, I don't see Commissioner Meyer here, but Representative Hackbarth, I'm just thinking through this amendment. We, in the first year of Lassard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, the first 2 years passed a conservation easement on 186,000 acres of private land that Potlatch owns. Would this amendment actually say when we spent $38 million to have public access to that land, that every person that was to go on that 186,000 acres to set a trap would now not be able to unless they got permission from whoever the corporation is that owns it?
We believe so, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, you know what? That's not true.
Right.
Because it says not subject to open public already. So I should have read the amendment.
Oh, there you go.
Thank you. Yep. So we're good. I
not subject to, yep.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Thank you. Representative Cornish.
Representative Hackbarth, you don't need written permission to go on woodland right now to hunt, do you?
No.
Representative Hackbarth, no.
I don't know why you would have to have it for trapping, that's all.
Under current law, you don't. The only place you don't have to have permission is open land that's not agricultural. All agricultural land, you're required to have permission to go on that. That includes Mr. Lestico's CRP is considered agricultural, correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. CRP is considered agricultural. Everyone would need permission to what the statute sets out as recreate. So hunt, fish, trap, look for mushrooms, that type of thing. You would need it on CRP or ag. For non-ag land, that's recreational. So outside of urban areas, right now there is not the need for permission for anyone for recreational purposes if it's not posted.
Okay. Representative Fisher, you can have last comments on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to call for a roll call on this one. As we take a look at this issue, I would say that we've already have carved out agricultural lands as protection. And when I take a look at, and having heard from people in our district and around the state, they're concerned about the fact that they do not have control over their lands, and while they will do the postings, it's not unusual that after weather takes down their postings, everything else, they have to go through the barriers. So if you're a private landowner, you have to do a lot more work to protect your land than somebody else who wants to come and put something on it that you don't want. That's not fair.
Clerk will call the roll. McNamara votes no.
Fabian?
No.
Cornish?
No.
Eklund?
No.
Benton?
Yes.
Fisher?
Yes.
Green?
No.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hancock?
No.
Hansen?
Yes.
Hausman?
Yes.
Heinzman?
Yes.
Ornstein?
Yes.
Johnson?
Aye.
Neuberger?
No.
Purcell?
No.
Poppy?
No.
Rarick?
No.
Torkelson?
No.
And you, Clemens. Oh, and Representative Clark?
Yes.
Oh, you are here. Hi.
There being 7 ayes and 13 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Let's see, next we'll go to the A2. Is that your Representative Hansen? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move the A2 amendment and ask for a roll call.
Okay. Representative Hansen moves the A2 amendment. Representative Hansen, why don't you walk us through your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hackbarth had mentioned the poaching requirement, and what's currently in the bill relates to is on page 7, and it says you'd have an increase related to if there's 2 or more trophy animals as defined for a gross over limit violation. The A2 amendment is the governor's initiative, I think, which both Commissioner Landwehr and the governor referenced at the DNR roundtable. It provides for increased penalties when it's not just for 2 trophy animals, it's for there's a gross over limit with wild animals. That means, you know, people are taking way over the limit. It has on the back additional penalties for, I'd like to point out on section 14, a person may not obtain a license to take a wild animal. It's prohibited from taking wild animals for 10 years after the date of conviction of a violation when the restitution value of wild animals is $2,000 or more. And then you have subsequent description of that. So this, I think, provides some protection for the public resource for having significant penalties for taking too many of our public resources.
Representative Cornish.
Representative Hanson, are you trying to make the penalties more severe than what they are?
Representative Hanson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Cornish, yes.
Representative Cornish.
I'm having a little trouble figuring out the DFL on this one, and my committee continually, they vote to lessen the penalties on severe crashes and death, and they want to hammer somebody for taking too many animals, so they're all over the board on this one. This bill started out with the governor as a felony, and KSTP came to my place and interviewed me on this, and I told them that this is not the way to go after the people. The way to go after them is their licenses or confiscate their equipment. The charge doesn't seem to make a difference on the severity, and so I don't favor hammering somebody with a felony for taking animals when we continually can't get through more severe penalties for murder, rape, and drugs. In fact, they're considering lessening the penalties right now on drug sentencing, which seems to be a popular liberal idea. So I can't comprehend the idea behind putting all this penalty on animal takers.
Representative Cornish, can you remind us if someone was to pop a trophy whitetail out the window of their $75,000 Suburban with their $3,000 rifle, what potentially could happen to that person?
Well, depending on the severity charge or whether it's a shining at night or a lot of other things, the severity already, you can take the vehicle and the firearm and their hunting privileges. I think this one increases the probably in hunting privileges, and that's another good way to go after them instead of the severity of the charge is upping the amount of time that they do without their license, because they really treasure that, and I think the bill in here increases the revocation limit there. So I just don't like the felony charge.
Well, and Representative Cornish, my point was, and we have done that under current law, when somebody is so stupid to shoot a trophy whitetail illegally, we can confiscate their vehicle no matter how valuable, and their gun no matter how nice it is, and make them come back and buy their own car back or make their own gun back. And that's current law, and that's a great thing. And Representative Hackbarth, I know you're strengthening some of those provisions, because unfortunately we've had some really tragic situations. The one specifically, the guy out there in by Appleton that was doing things that were unbelievably gross. And so thank you for your work on that. Representative Hanson, any further comments on your amendments or closing thoughts? All those in favor of the hands? Oh, yes, for roll call. McNamara votes no.
Fabian?
No.
Clark?
Yes.
Cornish?
No.
Eklund?
Yes.
Benson?
No.
Fisher?
Yes.
Green?
No.
Hepburth?
No.
Hancock?
No.
Hanson?
Yes.
Hausman?
Yes.
Heintzman?
No.
Ornstein?
Yes.
Johnson?
Aye.
Neuberger?
No.
Purcell?
Aye.
Poppy?
Yes.
Rarick?
No.
Torkelson?
No.
Uglum?
No.
There being 9 ayes, not adopted. Next, I think we have Representative Hausman. Do you have the A3 amendment? Representative Hausman, I believe it's yours. It is a Blaze Pink amendment, Representative Hausman.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll move it.
When is, can somebody, did you find it? Okay. Representative Hausman moves the A3 amendment. Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, since we're on the Game and Fish Bill, I thought I would tell my wildlife story from my neighborhood last night when I got home. From here, there was a message on my machine from a neighbor who said they had a live duck in their fireplace. Fortunately, the glass doors were closed. They tried, first of all, a towel, and this poor duck went crazy, and he worried he was going to, you know, hurt this thing, and they called the Wildlife Rehab Center. They were closed. Peter Sorensen is their neighbor, and so they thought maybe they'd go over and consult him, and they said, well, he works with fish. You know him, right? And so they finally were connected to Animal Control, who skillfully removed this and pointed out that in all of his 20 years as an animal control officer, he had never been called to take a live duck out of a fireplace before. They'll have to figure out how they prevent that from ever happening again. So, Mr. Chair, my understanding is, I haven't been on previous committees where this has been discussed, but the idea of the Blaze Pink was to recruit women as hunters, to give them a reason to become hunters. And so I thought to speak on behalf of the amendment, I would let the public speak, and so I gathered some comments from them, and one woman said, only a man could have come up with something like this. From a previous testimony, I think this was, on a more serious note, a woman who thought she would never want to advertise the fact that she was a woman hunting alone in the woods. A young man that I asked looked at with a rather puzzled look, saying, isn't that sexist? And then the last two were women. One responded, oh, for gosh sakes. And the final one, what the crazy, that's in a bill? So this is the public sort of responding when I described this section of the bill. Interestingly, not one person said, well, that's a good idea. I think I'll start hunting since I can wear pink. So anyway, I just wanted to make the point with this and remove this, and my response would be, so guys, let's take this out.
Well, Representative Hausman, I guess the other perspective would be my granddaughter, Elena, thinks it's really cool that she gets to wear camo that's pink. And I truthfully believe she's more excited about going hunting because she gets to wear that. It's a really popular camo pink camouflage that is really popular, and she thinks it's really cool. And I truthfully believe she's much more interested in pursuing her family's tradition of going out in the woods because of it. So I think I get where, you know, I understand where some people might think it's sexist. The reality is there's some good evidence scientifically that it may be advantageous to hunt with that color because deer don't necessarily see it as well. There is also some concern by some folks about color blindness issue around the color of blue that raises some concern. So
that,
thank
Mr.
you,
Chair,
Representative Hausman.
On a more serious note, Mr. Chair, that Representative Russo, I think, has made that point that there perhaps needs to be a little more work on this issue about the issue of color blindness and the shade of pink.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hausman, I appreciate your perspective, but I also know that you know, if you go on the Cabela's website, if you go into different sporting goods stores around the country, there's any number of pink items. And if you go into my two granddaughters' closets, they like to wear pink. I don't know why, but they do. And Representative Dill used to caution members and people who are watching because Representative Fabian is probably on his phone to somebody back home trying to relay some messages back and forth. So I actually did send an email to a little girl whose grandfather made sure that she has a stainless steel 270 bolt-action rifle ready for her when she gets old enough to go hunting deer. And I asked very simply, when you go hunting, do you want to wear blaze orange or blaze pink? And the one-word response was pink. So I appreciate where you're coming from, but this is all about choice. Nobody's forcing anybody to wear blaze pink, except maybe Representative Hackbarth, or I mean Representative Hancock. Today I'm not sure. This is about giving people a choice. And I appreciate what some people might feel, but the reality is that in today's world, there are lots of women that like to wear pink. Whether we like it or not, they do. So this is about giving people an option, and I oppose the amendment respectfully. Representative Hausman.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to have the DNR come down to talk. I mean, I think that it's, we've had a lot about personal stories, but I'd like to hear about the science on this, because whatever the choice, the concern of why we wear a blaze orange or a blaze color is not about the deer or about what we like, but so people don't get shot. You know, and if we're out in the woods and we can't, and a hunter can't see the person because they can't see the color, or the color blends in at dusk and you can't see it, then people are at risk. That's why we have blaze orange, and we had used to have red. I still have old red woolen clothing that my dad had, but I don't wear it out in the woods because I don't want to get shot. So I'd like to hear from the DNR about safety.
Colonel Smith, identify yourself for the record.
Rodman Smith, Director of Enforcement, Department of Natural Resources, Mr. Chair.
Colonel, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the International Hunters Education Association has been looking at this issue. There hasn't been a lot of hard science about it. They have not taken an opinion. The state of Wisconsin has adopted this. Minnesota, along with, I believe, four or five other states, are also looking at this issue in their state legislatures. The department's been neutral on this. There are, you know, blaze orange is required, but there is an exemption in state law for if blaze orange does not conform with the religious beliefs of certain individuals. And to give you an idea, that would be primarily like the Amish communities. They can still wear red. So there are some other colors out there other than blaze orange that people are able to wear to conform with law. So. You know, right now we're taking a neutral stance because we have not seen the hard science, or have the nationwide safety communities have seen that science either. So,
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just on that point, where I hunt, there are Amish, and they will wear a orange vest because they don't want to get shot. So I'd ask for a roll call on this.
Okay. Thank you. See no further discussion. Anybody in the audience want to speak about blaze pink? Anybody in the audience want to speak about to the Hausman Amendment? Representative Hausman, you want to give final comments? Or Representative Hackbarth, do you support the amendment? Do you want to make comment?
Just one comment. Just one comment, Mr. Chairman. I do oppose the amendment. This is not just for hunter recruitment for women. It is for that, but it's also... The professor in Wisconsin did an extensive study on this issue, and this just gives folks a choice. I would consider wearing pink in the woods when I'm deer hunting, because deer can't see pink as well as they can see the blaze orange. Blaze orange has a blue hue to it. It's a proven fact that that has a blue hue to it, and deer can see blue, and they can't see pink as well as they can see the blaze orange. So I just wanted to make that point. It's also for men.
Yes. Representative Hackbarth, if this bill passes and become law, will you take a selfie when you're in the tree at Lake Woods County and send it to me on opening day next year?
I absolutely will, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Hausman, you have the last word. Cornish, then Hausman. Cornish.
Just one quick statement. The DNR, I think, had a program of women of the outdoors and recruiting women and into the outdoors. And I guarantee you none of those women are afraid to be in the woods alone.
Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, I do think the serious piece of this is that issue that Representative Russo raised earlier, I think, and that is that it is still a little unclear, the issue of color blindness and that color. And I don't know where the science is going on that, but I think that's probably the serious issue.
Okay, thank you. See no further discussion. Clerk will call the roll. McNamara votes no.
Fabian?
No.
Clark?
Yes.
Cornish?
No.
Eklund?
Yes.
Benton?
No.
Fisher?
Yes.
Green?
No.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hancock?
No.
Hanson?
Yes.
Hausman?
Yes.
Heintzman?
No.
Ornstein?
Yes.
Johnson?
No.
Neuberger?
No.
Purcell?
Aye.
Poppy?
No.
Rarick?
No.
Torkelson?
No.
And Uglum?
No.
There being 7 ayes and 14 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Next, we have the A4 amendment. I believe Representative Hausman, that might be yours, the lead shot amendment.
Correct. I'll move that, A4. And just for background, for several years, there was an LCCMR project that the Raptor Center was advancing. All it was from what they had learned, they were moving in a direction where they would provide some voluntary education. 2 years in a row, that LCCMR project was removed. My concern on this, just given what the DNR said earlier, is that I would think we would want to know what they learned, what DNR knows and understands about this. The DNR took action because they were concerned about, as they said, that long-term legacy on the land. So we can be head in the sand until the problem gets worse, or we can listen to some of the experts who are trying to tell us we need to be very cautious in this area. And so I'm moving this amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment? Representative Heckbarth?
Mr. Chairman, I oppose the amendment. This was brought forward because I don't believe there's any real science behind this issue. We had a town hall meeting over at the DNR building on this towards the beginning of session. The DNR is moving forward on this on their own, and I don't agree with it, and I don't think the sporting community agrees with it either. Everyone I talk to is opposed. I know all the gun rights folks are against it as well. I just don't see any reason for the amendment or why we should be having a lead ban at all. So I oppose the amendment.
Thank you. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could the DNR come down and testify?
Sure. DNR, come down, please. Remind us, state your name for the record, please, and who you represent.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Pat Rivers, Minnesota DNR, Acting Deputy Director.
Proceed. Representative Hanson, just if you want to clarify your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Rivers, so could you give a little background on public input onto the process, and then I have some specific questions about the sites and that, where this would be effective. So maybe some background on process.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson. We've had a lot of public input this past fall, and also most recently on March 10th at that public meeting at the Minnesota DNR headquarters. Approximately half of our public is in favor of this, and half oppose. What we're proposing is to ban the use of lead on our state WMAs in the farmland zone, approximately 500,000 acres. This is a small fraction of the land base in that area. And as has been mentioned, there has been scientific research done not only about the toxicity of lead, but also about state wildlife management areas in South Dakota and the impacts of lead on game birds there. We're looking at the long-term stewardship of our WMAs. It's well known that one of the most effective times to hunt pheasant, and the time I like to hunt the most, is after ISO. And a lot of our WMAs were purchased during the Save Our Wetlands campaign and have a lot of extensive wetlands. At this time, a lot of that lead shot is deposited in our wetlands where ducks and waterfowl can access it for their digestive system. So we feel it's the right thing to do for the long-term stewardship of our WMAs. We've looked into the cost comparison of lead versus steel, and you can find good alternatives for steel on these for this type of hunting.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Rivers, just to be clear, you're not talking about private land, and you're not talking about all public lands. You're talking about a specific subset of wildlife management area land. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen, that's correct.
And no Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and you know, I think there are differences in the sporting community on this. I know at the DNR roundtable, Les Bench, who I don't always agree with, Mr. Chair, but I think he testified in favor of this. I think I think maybe it's time to, you know, have that conversation about when we use the words all and everybody. It's really hard to speak for all and everybody when there are 5.5 million people in the state. We, as a country, have taken lead out of gasoline. People resisted that. We took lead out of paint. There's probably a whole library of the impacts that lead has. And on public lands, if we can minimize that impact to the public resource, I think we should. I know there are disagreements, and I know when we have anything like this, the fire alarms go off and we have the response from the interests of, oh my gosh, this is going to lead to something else. But I think this is a prudent step. It's only dealing with the public land, which is the public resource with public wildlife on it. So I would support Representative Hausman's amendment.
Any further discussion? All those in favor of the House? I'm sorry. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the issues that are being studied in regard to human health hazards from animals that are any kind of fish or other animals that are got through with lead shot.
Mr. Rivers.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I didn't fully hear your question, but I'm not sure what research is going on in terms of eating wild game with lead shot. This isn't really a public health issue. It's about doing, in terms of why we're proposing it. I think individuals can choose that, but we're looking at the long-term stewardship of the lands, which was our issue.
Thank you.
Representative Clark.
Well, sometimes, you know, public health issues are embedded in those kinds of issues, so I guess I would just urge you to put that in there. If that's not something you're considering, I would urge you to consider it.
Mr. Rivers.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, it is an issue that I would think hunters will address as they clean the game, and certainly research could look into that, and we would support additional research toward that end, but we're looking, again, about the stewardship of the lands.
Representative Hausman, any closing comments on the amendment?
Just to remind everyone, members, that so the DNR was proposing a very narrow restriction, nothing broad at all, and I would encourage us to cooperate with that very, very narrow restriction that they're suggesting, so I urge a yes vote.
All those in favor of the 8-4 say aye.
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 Opposed, nay.
No.
The amendment's not adopted. Members, we do have, I think, five more. It looks like we'll be coming back tonight. Unless they go quicker, six. So just to let folks know, it looks like we'll be back tonight. Representative Hansen, you have the A5. Fish kill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd move the A5 amendment. This sets up a scientific protocol to respond to fish kills, however they occur. It provides for reporting. Mr. Chair and members, you may remember that there was a unified report from all the agencies to a major fish kill last year. What this would do is provide for a scientific protocol to determine what occurs with the fish kills. In many cases, it may just be the dissolved oxygen or ice out, but this would provide for setting up a protocol for responding and interaction between the agencies.
Okay, thank you. Anybody in the audience to speak for or against the A5? Representative Hackbarth, do you support the A5? Representative Hackbarth, do you support the A5, the fish kill amendment?
No, Mr. Chairman, I do not. This is not something that's been heard in the legislature.
Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the A5 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
No.
The amendment's not adopted. Next, members, we have Representative Poppy. You have the A9 amendment that deals with ethanol. Representative Poppy moves the A9.
Move the A9.
Please explain the amendment, Representative Poppy.
This is just a simple amendment to remove subdivision 4 on page 2. It's the regarding the Commissioner of Natural Resources not being required to purchase ethanol blended fuel. And I'm just concerned about that. I guess it just seems like something that we shouldn't be restricting the use of our ethanol blended fuels in the state.
Representative Hackbarth, do you support the A9?
I do not.
Anybody in the audience want to speak for or against the A9? See no one. Representative Hanson?
I'd like a roll call.
Representative Hanson requests a roll call. See no further discussion. McNamara votes no.
Fabian?
No.
Clark?
Yes.
Cornish?
No.
Eklund?
Yes.
Benton?
No.
Fisher?
Yes.
Green?
No.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hancock?
No.
Hanson?
Yes.
Hausman?
Yes.
Heinzman?
No.
Hornstein?
Yes.
Johnson?
Aye.
Neuberger?
No.
Purcell?
Aye.
Poppy?
Yes.
Rarick?
No.
Torkelson? Is that this? And Uglum?
No.
There being 9 ayes and 11 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Next, we have the Hanson 810 deals with drones. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move the A10 amendment. This was a bill that was heard in Representative Hackbarth's committee. I know, Representative Hackbarth, you had had some concerns about fixed wing, and I know the airports had had some concerns, and so I've put those exemptions in the bill, and I'd like to ask for your support.
Representative Hackbarth, do you support the amendment?
I do not support the A10 amendment, Mr. Chairman. I told Representative Hanson that I would work on this issue with him, and apparently he took it upon himself to draft this amendment, so okay. I oppose the amendment.
Seeing no one.
Roll call.
Anybody to discuss the A10 amendment public? Representative Hanson, you have closing comments on the A10.
Mr. Chair, I would ask for roll call on the amendment.
Roll call being requested. McNamara votes no.
Fabian?
No.
Clark?
Yes.
Cornish?
No.
Eklund?
Yes.
Benton?
No.
Fisher?
Yes.
Green?
No.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hancock?
No.
Hanson?
Yes.
Hausman?
Yes.
Heinzman?
No.
Hornstein?
Yes.
Johnson?
Aye.
Neuberger?
Nope.
Purcell?
Aye.
Poppy?
Yes.
Rarick?
No.
Torkelson?
No.
Uglum?
Nope.
There being 9 ayes and 12 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Next, we have the Hanson, the Trophy Walleye Amendment, the A11.
And Mr. Chair, that is on page 19.
Correct. The amendment to A11.
So it removes section 36, where we would be directing in law that the Commissioner of Natural Resources must allow possession of one walleye over 28 inches during the 2016 season until the portion of the walleye quota has been met.
Correct. Representative Hackbarth, do you support the amendment?
I do not support the amendment, Mr. Chairman. I can tell you that the DNR is working in the direction of doing what it's in the bill.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Representative Hanson, do you want a roll call?
Mr. Chair, I think it's important that the DNR be allowed to work rather than having the legislature write this in. I'm not going to go with a roll call right now.
All those in favor of the Hanson A11 say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
No. The amendment's not adopted. Members, next we have the The Muskie, Representative Hansen, I believe you have the A8 amendment?
Yes. I'd move the A8 amendment.
Representative Hansen moves the A8 amendment. Representative Hansen, do you want a roll call on this amendment?
This one I do.
Okay. Representative Hansen requests a roll call on the A8 amendment. Members, how many in the audience want to speak to the amendment? Does anybody in the audience want to speak to the amendment? You got to raise your hands higher so I can count them. Okay, I got four people that want to speak to it. If you each limit your five, if we each limit it to 1 minute, we can take the testimony, we can vote on the bill, and then we won't have to come back tonight. So I'm going to have the five of you stand up, and I want each one of you to nod your head yes if you're in agreement with that. If you're not in agreement, I'm not going to squash public testimony, but you're going to have to limit yourself to 1 minute, and I'm going to cut you off at 1 minute. Okay, I don't see anybody saying no. So just line up in order. You're going to be limited to 1 minute, and I'm going to actually cut you off completely at 1 minute. And if you go less than 1 minute, we'll actually get done in time. So you don't need to repeat anything. It's already got a roll call on it, so rock and roll. Go ahead, give us your name and your testimony.
Mr. Chair, Tim Spreck, speaking for the Minnesota Dark House Angling Association. Very briefly, we oppose this amendment. The scope of the bill is very limited to local areas where people are not interested in muskie, and I'll move aside. Thank you.
Go ahead, sir. If you could tell us your name and who you represent. Thank you.
I represent the Big Marine Veterans Rest Camp. There are two talking points I'll give out. There are several nonprofit groups on this lake for peace and quiet and fishing. Everybody that comes up to the camp loves to fish. There's also another group, and that's the Girl Scouts. They have a camp there too. The Yellow Ribbon Campers, which share our property, and the Washington County Beach. The lake is currently doing well with the fish that are in the lake. There's no need to take or to try and interfere with the sustainment of the fishing experiences that gives to people who fish it. The veterans camp sponsored two homes, Minneapolis Home and Hastings, to come up there fishing. Well, they can't get out there every day of the week.
Sir, you only have a couple seconds left. Are you for or against the amendment?
I'm against having muskie stopped.
Okay, thank you. And next, if you want to go ahead with your testimony.
All right. Chairman Mack, members of the committee, my name is Kirk Schnitker. I'm with an organization called Muskies Sportsmen for Responsible Muskie Management. There's a number of concerns about this matter, but the primary concerns, enough is enough as far as the muskie stocking in the state. Over 35% of the state's waters are being managed for muskies at this time. At one time, there was a part of the recent proposal, there's a proposal to stock Gull Lake. Gull Lake was addressed by the DNR in 2007-2008. For 2 years, the matter was vetted. The decision was not to stock the lake. It didn't make any sense, and now it's back on the plate again. Muskie stocking is very expensive. The DNR has limited budget. Enough is enough. We have less than 8%, 5% of the folks in the state actually fish for muskies, but yet over 35% to 40% of our lakes have the muskies in the state. The DNR says...
Are you opposed or for?
I'm opposed to the amendment. Thank you.
Appreciate your testimony. Sir, if you could identify yourself for the
yes,
record.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Jeff Dahlberg. I'm with the Big Marine Lake Association over in Washington County. I live in Big Marine Lake. We had passed out earlier an opposition list. We have many, many people across the state that are basically opposed. Many organizations, townships, lake associations throughout the state. We have Minnehaha Creek, which is the whole village of Minnetonka. A lot of these people up north basically have muskie stocked in their lakes for years and are basically watching the deterioration of their panfish and walleye fishing. That's why they oppose it.
Thank you. We appreciate you testifying. Anybody else in the audience want to speak for or against the bill? Representative Hansen renews his... I'm sorry. Oh, you? I didn't see your hand up. Who else is here? Come on down. All three of you? We're going to go to recess, folks. You guys didn't raise your hand. We're in recess until we come back. In the Environment, Natural Resources, Policy, and Finance Committee. Representative Hackbarth, I believe we had three more testifiers. Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to speak for or against the bill other than the three testifiers? Anybody else in the audience that wants to speak for or against the bill? Representative Hackbarth, welcome back. Representative Hackbarth, we've got House File 2844 before us. It's the motion is to send it to Ways and Means. We have three more testifiers. Sirs, if you want to, guys, if you want to come down one at a time, that'd be great. You can get ready there. If you want to give us your testimony, identify yourself for the record, that'd be great. If you're all together, you can grab another chair and I'll sit there if you want. That's fine. Welcome. Go ahead. Who's ever first?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, John Underhill, Minnesota Muskie and Pike Alliance. Thank you for this opportunity. The issue that we have with this bill initially on the surface was we saw it as a muskie issue. I think a deeper issue with it is public encroachment from property owners. And that's the way that everything is pointing. The gentleman that's been going around the state saying these things about muskies and how they're going to destroy the lakes and how many problems they've had, which is all false. None of this has been proven scientifically or on the water. In his last newsletter to his members of the Lake Association, says that we need to get these five lakes and then next year we can go for the other 40 lakes. Our concern is that muskie fishing is being marginalized, for one. That's how many of you are there? There's more muskie fishermen than duck hunters, than goose hunters. There's more of us than muzzle loaders. It's a growing sport, and the state of Minnesota invests millions of dollars into recruitment and retention and trying to get young people involved. And this is the one thing that young people are really being drawn to. There's many people that were interested, that they're more of a hunter mentality type person, and they're drawn to this sport. And kids love it. You can take a kid out 8 years old and they will musky fish all day long with you. You put that spinner bait in the water and they love it. So initially we thought it was a musky thing. And the more we've looked at it and the more we've seen his pattern, it is a property rights issue. He is looking to gain control of public water. And what's next? Duck hunters can't go out and duck hunt because they make too much noise. Spear fishermen can't go out and cut 3x2 holes in the ice. Where does it end? And it's a slippery slope and it's bad policy. And that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Underhill. Sir, if you could identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Christopher Patternis. I'm here to speak on behalf of my family's resort. Gulf Four Seasons Resort has been owned and operated by our family on the east shore of Gull Lake near Nisswa since 1977. Gull Lake has always been a fishing destination, and fishing is an important part of what our resort is all about. Introducing muskies into Gull Lake will provide an important fishing resource to anglers. Although a skewed survey showed a 70% disapproval for stocking muskies, the Gull Lake Association voted 7-1 not to take a stance on this issue. We have vested interest in keeping fishing viable in Minnesota, and providing opportunities that meet the changing preferences of anglers is vital. I've talked to numerous people on and off the water who support muskie stocking. Scientific studies support the fact that muskies can coexist with other fish species without harming existing fish populations, and there is currently a small population of muskies already in Gull. Muskie fishing is a sought-after activity. Muskie fishing provides economic benefits to the areas where it is available. Do not be misled by voices standing in the way of change. People become very possessive and exclusionary regarding the lakes they have a cabin or house on. The lakes of Minnesota are public waters and must be managed with the greater public good in mind. This is an investment in the future of the lakes and businesses on the lakes. Consider this a strong endorsement for muskie fishing on Gull Lake. We need to keep the public waters public.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Seeing no questions, if you could identify yourself for the record, sir, and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman McNamara and committee members. My name is Greg Qualley. I'm representing Anglers for Habitat, and I'm also here as a proxy for Al Linder and Linder Media Productions. They put together a short two-minute video supporting muskie stocking and asking the committee to please not include this language in the Game and Fish Bill. Some of you in the committee here were privileged to see that that short video, and it's quite compelling. As most of you know, Mr. Linder has made his living teaching us all how to fish. He's very passionate about fishing and promoting the sport and pastime of fishing. And he's sorry that he can't be here, but he strongly encourages you to not pass on anti-muskie language in your bill, and also to keep the public waters available for everybody, every citizen in the state of Minnesota. That's Mr. Linder's statement. I'd like to make a statement myself for Anglers for Habitat. First of all, we feel strongly that this is somewhat of a property rights issue also, in that it is kind of exclusionary language here. Gull Lake in particular is a beautiful body of water. It's got a lot of use. We all have a lot of use. We all have rights to access that water. As Anglers for Habitat, we also feel that it's the Department of Natural Resources Division of Fisheries' job to professionally manage these waters in Minnesota. They have a marvelous program of muskie management in Minnesota. They've done a good job. They stock these fish when they do in extremely low densities. There's absolutely no factual data out there that indicates that, and I'll be a little humorous here, that that muskies eat kids and eat all the walleyes in the lake. It's just not true. So we would certainly ask that the committee gives serious consideration to not including this language and supporting Representative Hansen's amendment to this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I was just seeking to clarify that each of the three testifiers supported my amendment. Is that correct?
That is correct, Chairman. Representative Hansen, that is correct.
Why don't you get on the record to the third one?
Yes, that's correct.
All three of them are in support of your amendment. And Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, I did ask for a roll call, correct?
Yes, there is a roll call request on the amendment. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wanted to confirm, it looks like these three pages are all groups or individuals who also would have your point of view on that. Is that correct? Ron Shara and others on that.
Correct.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Hansen, any closing comments?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think this is a good amendment. The provision that's in the bill is very specific. I think we've gone through this before where we're directing specific lake activity. I think these three gentlemen made the point that here's a growing and expanding outdoor activity, and change is occurring in the state. And we need to be looking at that change and how to embrace it rather than trying to hold on to memory in terms of what is our state. So I'm hopeful that we can support the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming down. Representative Hackbarth, any closing comments, or do you want to let us know on the amendment?
I'm good, Mr. Chairman.
I oppose the amendment.
Okay. Clerk will call the roll. McNamara votes no.
Fabian.
No.
Clark.
Yes.
Cornish.
No.
Eklund.
Yes.
Benton.
No.
Fisher.
Yes.
Green.
No.
Hackbarth.
No.
Hancock.
No.
Hansen.
Yes.
Hausman.
Yes.
Heintzman.
No.
Hornstein. Johnson.
Aye.
Neuberger.
No.
Purcell.
Aye.
Poppy.
Yes.
Rarick.
No.
Torkelson.
No.
Uglum.
No.
There being 8 ayes and 12 nays, the amendment's not adopted. I think we have one more amendment. Representative Eklund, I believe it's your amendment, the A13.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. It's a pretty simple amendment. It's just a bill authorizing people that buy a lifetime hunting and fishing license to have it added to their driver's license, and so they don't have to continually renew the license every year when they go into the sports outdoor dealers or whatever it is when they have a lifetime hunting and fishing license.
Anybody in the audience to speak for or against the bill? Anybody in the audience to speak for or against the bill? Representative Hackbarth, do you support the amendment?
Neutral.
Okay. Representative Fabian, are you making comments? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a point of clarification. I have a family member who lives out of state, but when they lived in Minnesota, they bought a lifetime license. I'm just assuming that the process is going to remain the same for those people, correct? And maybe, Mr. Meyer, it's not fair to ask Representative Eklund that. I can't imagine there's any change, but I just want to make sure.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. That individual will still be able to go to a licensing agent or online and get that license.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody in the audience to speak for or against the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The amendment is adopted. Members, closing comments. Representative Hackbarth to House File 2844 as amended.
Advocate to Ways and Means, Mr. Chairman.
To Ways and Means, yes. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had since Mr. Meyer is at the table, I know the amendment that I offered did not pass, but I wanted to have Mr. Meyer give me the position of the DNR on that subdivision 4 and eliminating what I was wanting to do, which was to take that off, and it stayed in the bill. So I just wanted to hear from the DNR.
Commissioner Meyer, she's asking DNR's position on the ethanol requirement, or the not that you not require ethanol in small engines.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Poppy, that was not in the DNR's bill as introduced, so that was added on by the legislature in Representative Hackbarth's committee. I believe we have the flexibility to use non-oxygenated gas when we need to right now, but we do try to use ethanol whenever possible.
Representative Poppy, has further comment?
Thank you. I'm just disappointed that the amendment didn't pass. Thank you.
Any further questions on House File 2844? All those in favor of House File 2844 say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The bill is passed and on to Ways and Means. Members, we are done. We are adjourned.